We need a new leadership model in business today, one that values people and results, where leaders see their role as serving instead of being served. Each month, my friend and colleague Chad Gordon interviews a different author who helps us explore what we call people-centered leadership. I know you'll be encouraged and inspired by what you hear, and you'll walk away with ideas and insights that will help you be the type of leader others want to follow. Ready to get started? I'll be back at the end of the interview where I'll share what I learned and how I'll be putting these ideas into action. Now enjoy this month's installment of the Blanchard Leader Chat Podcast.
Blanchard Leader Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Gordon. Today is a special episode of the podcast because we have Ken Blanchard himself joining us. Ken, welcome to the Blanchard Leader Chat Podcast.
It's always good to be with you, Chad, that's for sure.
So this is an exciting book we're talking about, Servant Leadership in Action. It's such a great concept because you've got luminaries from the leadership world, the business world, so many different folks that have provided chapters. How did this book come about?
Well, you know, it really kind of started back in the 60s when I was at Ohio University. I got a chance to meet Robert Greenleaf. He was a buddy of the president of Ohio University, and he did a program for a weekend, and I was working with a lot of the student leaders. And he had just retired from AT&T, and he really just felt there was a different leadership style needed, you know. And so that was the beginning of me looking at that, and it's been an interesting journey as I've gotten into it more and more. Because, Chad, the world today, probably more than ever before, is in the need of a different leadership role model. We've seen what self-serving leaders have done in every sector of society, you know, from government to business to faith-based organizations or what have you. People who think that all the brains are in their office and it's all about them, where a person who's a servant leader realizes it's not about me, it's about the people I'm trying to lead and how do I really bring out the best in them. And it's the only way I know to get great results and great human satisfaction. It's exciting. And I thought that if I'm going to try to start a movement, which I think we need around the world, I needed key people who would be willing to contribute their viewpoints on it. And so I got a really amazing cross-section of people, including Simon Sinek, you know, who really is now well known for the, you know, Begin With Why, and Brené Brown has done a lot of work on vulnerability, and Marshall Goldsmith, and Florence Hesselbaum, who really led the Girl Scouts and did a tremendous turnaround, Lori Beth Jones, you know. And then I got practitioners like Colleen Barrett, who was the president of Southwest Airlines, Cheryl Batchelor, who turned around Popeyes with servant leadership. And so this is really one of the most exciting projects I've ever been, because I think we got a chance, Chad, to really make a difference out there. And this book is not about me, and it's not about making money. In fact, all the royalties are going to a foundation for servant leadership, which is a nonprofit that we've organized to kind of help support projects that are working on servant leadership. So this is the legacy that I want to leave, really.
I love that. You've shared that before, that this is a movement. This is what you want to be known for. This is the legacy that you want to impart to everyone. Let's go back to that meeting and that time with Robert Greenleaf. So he's kind of known as the modern father of servant leadership. What were some of the you know, what was your learnings from him?
Well, he really started the whole movement to say that the best leaders are leaders who it's about the other people, not themselves. And he just found in industry too often, you know, as he observed from his various roles in AT&T around in the industry, that those were people where maybe results got, but, you know, morale and turnover and all kinds of things. And so he was just starting to really think through the whole concept and really just was the first one that said, let's call it servant leadership. And a lot of people say, gee, that how can you serve and lead at the same time? And he and I have, you know, really felt that you do if you understand really that there's two parts of leadership, servant leadership. One is vision, direction, goals, and all. Leadership's about going somewhere. And the traditional hierarchy, Chad, is responsible for making sure people know where you're going, what you're trying to accomplish, and all. Doesn't mean you don't involve people. You really do involve them, but it's your responsibility. If people working for you don't know where they're going, there's very little chance they're going to get there. You know, it's a, you know, like the two roads kind of thing. And so that's the beginning. That's the leadership part of servant leadership. And once that's clear, then it's the, this is the powerful thing. It's philosophically turning that pyramid upside down. And now people don't work for you. You work for them. And the traditional hierarchy, when you keep it alive, it sounds like people up the hierarchy are responsible and everybody's supposed to be responsive to them. Now, people up the hierarchy are responsible to making sure vision or values and goals are clear. But once they turn that upside down, now they want their people to be responsible, which is able to respond. And it's their job as a leader to be responsive to them, to give them what they need. And boy, that's just so... so powerful. And then, you know, when I started to get into, you know, situational leadership too, and we started to really take a look at different strokes for different folks, and then, you know, Spencer Johnson and I wrote the 1 Minute Manager together and all. In many ways, they're examples of servant leadership because both of those start with clear goals. You know, with situational leadership, if people don't know what the goals are, well then, how are you going to analyze their development level in order to give them the right leadership style? With a 1 Minute Manager, once goals are set, boy, you wander around and see if you can catch them doing something right and all. And if they aren't performing well, you talk to them and kind of redirect them and help them get back on path. So it's really exciting to see this. And in the book, we have, you know, both, you know, some faith-based leaders and in the area, as well as secular. You know, even Dave Ramsey wrote a wonderful article for me. And so it's really an exciting adventure. Phil Hodges and I wrote an article about, you know, Jesus, you know, probably one of the greatest servant leaders of all time. And the intention in any faith stuff is not to convert people, but just to show that it's important there, but it's also important in the secular world.
So for the business world, do you feel that there is an opportunity here for a sea change? You talk about this being a movement. What is the barriers in place right now that are keeping leaders and organizations to embrace this?
The biggest barrier, I think, is the belief that somehow that what makes a successful organization is really just the bottom line. It's the profit, you know. And what we have found in our research, and Drea Zagarmi and our son Scott and Vicky Estri, you know, they did a wonderful study on called the Leadership Profit Chain, where they looked at the relationship between strategic leadership, which is about vision and values and goals, and then operational leadership, which is how do you put it into the thing. And what they found is that strategic leadership is really important, but where the action is, probably 80 to 85% of the impact on employee satisfaction and customer loyalty comes from operational leadership. And so that what I've come to believe, and I think this is the whole philosophy of servant leadership, is profit is the applause you get for creating a motivating environment for your people so they'll take care of your customers. And when they take care of your customers, they become raving fans and become part of your sales force, and that takes care of the bottom line. But if we're just focused on the bottom line, then the hierarchy and self-serving leaders and all that kind of thing happens.
You've shared about setting goals. You've shared about going around and catching people doing the right things and that praise. For the listeners, for the people that are going to pick up this book, if I want to be a better leader, if I want to be a servant leader, what would be one of my first steps to take to really change the way I bring myself to whatever organization that I'm leading?
One of the things that's really clear in this book, Servant Leadership in Action, that effective leadership is an inside-out job. The first thing is to just look inside and ask the question, am I leading, you know, to serve or be served? It's a hard question. And one of the things that we look at, because when I ask people, you know, would you like to be a servant leader or a self-serving leader, of course people say, I don't want to be a self-serving leader at all. And yet we see it all the time. And what happens is we get our ego in the way. Which, there's two ways your ego get in the way. One is false pride, when you start thinking you're brighter, you're smarter, you're quicker than other people, and you know you have a more than philosophy. And the other way that your ego gets in the way is fear or self-doubt, when you have a less than philosophy, and you're focused on yourself. And that what we really find is that to overcome false pride, where you have this, I'm better than everybody, is humility. You know, and when Collins did his work in Good to Great, the second major characteristic of a great leader he found was humility. And he kept on saying to his researchers, go back and take a look at that. How can that be? And because a lot of people think humility is a weakness. And yet, I wrote a book with Norman Vincent Peale, the old positive thinking pastor. And we said that people with humility don't think less of themselves. They just think about themselves less, you know. And then Fred Smith, who was a wonderful guy, wrote a book called You and Your Network. He said, people, people who are really understanding themselves realize that the power that they have doesn't come from them, it comes through them. You know, it's really a gift. And that leadership is a major responsibility. It's a gift that people have given to you. Now, how do you give that gift back to people? And so that gets exciting to me.
Yeah, and it's exciting to read the different articles and the different submissions from all of the people that submitted and took part in this book. What's one of your favorite stories that was shared?
Well, I'm a big fan of John Gordon. He's a wonderful guy, and he wrote a recent book on positive leadership, but he has a wonderful story about going visiting his mother in Florida. And they went out for a walk, and he noticed that she was really tired. It was unusual because his mother was always in great shape and all. And he said, Mom, you really look tired. Let's go back. He says, No, we got to go because I got to go to the store to get material to make you a sandwich for your trip back home, because he lived up in Georgia. And so they get back home, and the first thing his mom does is she goes in and makes him this sandwich, you know, and gives him a hug and sends him off. And he just thought it was amazing and all. And that ended up being the last time he saw his mom, because she had cancer, and she just didn't want to tell him how serious it was and all. But here she is, the last thing she was wanted to think about is, how can I serve my son? And so what we're really saying is that, you know, servant leadership is not about a corporate person and all. It really is as a parent, you know, as a friend, as a colleague, as a manager and all. It's really sort of saying, what can I do to serve?
Yeah. What do you think are some of the misconceptions about servant leadership as a topic, as an idea?
I think big misconception is that it's soft manager. You know, it's all about, you know, kumbaya and everybody dancing and singing and all. But they forget about the two elements. You got to get the results, you know, which just comes from the leadership part, the vision and direction and all. So I think that's a big conception. And then I think there's also a conception that somehow it's just a religious concept. And that's just not true, you know. You just really see, we got a wonderful article in the book by the fellow that heads up the best companies to work for, you know, that old list. And he said, absolutely, the leaders of the best companies are all there to serve, not to be served. And I've been thinking about writing a book entitled Duh, which is why isn't common sense common practice? Because when I look at who do I know who is, you know, have servant leadership type organizations, Southwest Airlines, well, they're the only company that's made money in the airline industry steady for over 40 years, Nordstrom's in retail, Wegmans in the grocery business, Synovus in financial services, Disney in entertainment business, you know. And so I go, you know, if they do it and they get great results and great morale, why wouldn't you want to do it?
Yeah, you know, there's some great examples of organizations. When you think about your career and all the interactions you've had, who are some of the people that stand out and some examples of great servant leaders that you've worked with or you admire?
Well, it's really interesting. It's, you know, some people have been that way from the get-go. You know, I got to know Jim Blanchard. He's not a relative, but I would adopt him. And he was president of Synovus Financial Services. And, you know, they won the best company to work for from Fortune. They asked him to stop applying and started an all-star list. And that's just who Jimmy is, you know. He just lives serving other people. And then another one who, you know, really got it was Gary Ridge, who became president of WD-40. And he got in the master's degree program that Margie and I helped start at University of San Diego, Master of Science in Executive Leadership. In fact, you even got your degree there.
I did, yeah.
And he was really fascinated. When I told the story, I was in trouble as a college professor for 10 years because the first day of class, I always gave out the final examination. The faculty would say, "What are you doing?" I say, "I'm confused." They say, "Act." And I said, "I thought we were supposed to teach this kid. You don't give him the questions in the final." And I'd say, "Not only am I giving the questions in the final, what do you think I'm going to do? All semester, I'm going to teach them the answer." So when they get to the final, they get A. And Gary went, "Duh, why don't we do that in industry, you know?" And he started a thing at WD-40. We ended up writing a book about it called Help People Win at Work. And the subtitle is a business philosophy called Don't Mark My Paper, Help Me Get an A. And he set a whole setup where the beginning of the year, every one of the managers in their organization, they call them tribe leaders, with each of their tribe members would set goals and objectives with them, 3 to 5 at most. And then the job of the manager was to get them an A. And the other thing that he did, is I think is so unique, which we're now starting to push around the country, is it's silly for managers to be filling out performance review forms on their people while they're out there wondering how they did. Mm-hmm. At WD-40, people only fill out one performance review, their own. And it's the job of the manager to agree or disagree. And they meet once a quarter with each of their managers. And the first question the manager asks their direct report is the goals that we've established still relevant? Because a lot of times organizations set goals and they file them and nobody looks at them till the end of the year. And now you're evaluating people on stuff you maybe haven't worked. So they can change their goals all the way up to the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then they have a report card that says first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, because they meet once a quarter. And the direct report of the tribe member gives themselves an A, a B, a C, or an L. An L stands for I'm learning, so aren't. And the job of the manager is to say, gee, I don't think that's quite an A yet. You know, it's a good solid B. Let's talk about how we can get an A. And somebody might rate themselves down on something and say, that's not a C. That looks like a B. How do we? And so you should just see the performance of WD-40 in the stock market the last number of years. And then they do an internal employee satisfaction thing. And 98% of the people fill it out. I mean, that's unheard of, you know. And the last time they filled it out, the highest rated question was 98.7 people said, I'm proud to tell people I work for WD-40. And
so a great example of success, a great example of leadership from the very top of servant leadership. So some of the pushback, I think you said it before, you talked about the leadership profit chain. But let's dive in a little bit about results, because you know, everything in the business community now is it always has been. It's about results. Sure, it's about pleasing the stockholders. Mm-hmm. It's about profit. There will be some that would say, you know, servant leadership, does that jibe with results-oriented business world?
Well, it really does, because what we have found is that if your number one customer is your people, you take care of your people, you train your people, you love on your people, you empower your people, they get really excited about taking care of your customers, which is, you know, the line for your profit or your bottom line. And when they do that, those customers become excited about working with your company, and they start becoming part of your sales force and all, and that takes care of the numbers. And I think a lot of times people think, no, you don't want to get sidetracked, numbers, numbers, numbers. And numbers are important, you know, there's no doubt about this. So servant leadership isn't saying it's just about morale. It's about results and human satisfaction.
So you know, you've had such great success in the publishing world. The One Minute Manager is like lightning striking twice, and situational leadership too. So those are great legacies. Yeah. Why do you think servant leadership is is what you are rallying around now, and why do you feel like that ultimately is the legacy that you want to share?
Well, because I think it's a framework for all the good things that we've been teaching over the years. It's just because all of the things that we teach in our company, whether it's about trust, whether it's about managing change, whether it's about self-leadership, team leadership, and all, the whole philosophy is how are you going to get the most out of the people that you're working with in a way that they not only perform well, but they feel that they're part of an organization that they want to go to work on day rather than saying, thank God it's Friday. This is not just a program, because there's a whole bunch of kind of strategies that can fit under this, but the whole philosophy is that as a leader, your job is to serve, not to be served. It's not about you, it's about your people and the results that they can get. And boy, that's really a powerful thing. And that's the legacy I want to leave. And situational leadership and the woman manager are versions of servant leadership in action. But rather than saying everybody should be a situational leader, which is really, you know, wouldn't hurt, but I'd rather have them have the concept of why that's a powerful theory, why the three secrets of the one-minute manager have lasted so long. Why? Because people that use those, and with their people, they go, whoa, you know, I can't believe the results that we're getting, and my people seem to really enjoy coming to work.
So if I was able to pick up this book, it is really written in a way that you can just attack it chapter by chapter. It's not necessarily something you'd read all the way through. I mean, it has a lot of great examples that could be just in time opportunities for learning.
John Maxwell wrote the foreword for me for the book, and I said to him, you know, who should we get to endorse the book? And he said, basically, well, everybody's in the book that would endorse it. So when you open the book, the first thing you come to is contributors, and it's got 3.5 pages of each of the contributors and what they're known for. And then we divide the book into 6 categories, which is, you know, the first one is really kind of what is servant leadership, and then some of the dimensions of, and then we have exemplars of servant leadership. We end the book with one section is servant leadership in action, and these are people who have been using it in organizations successfully along. And then the last one, just for the final punch, is servant leadership turnarounds to show how people came into organizations that were really hurting and just turned the thing around by changing the leadership style.
It really is incredible when you look at the contributors and the different authors. There's so many. I mean, it's a who's who of
and the articles are all short.
Yeah,
I didn't want 20-30 pages. They're all about 5 or 6 pages long, so you can read a chapter a night easily, you know, and all. And you can go to the beginning and look at the concepts and go to that. You don't have to read it in a sequence and all. So I think I just hope it's a reference book for a movement that's so needed in this world, which is leaders who think it's not about them, it's about their people, and it's about the success of the organization.
So one last question in just a second. Typically, this would be when I would ask the guests where they can find you, and if people want to learn more about the organization and the things you're doing, the KenBlanchard.com is a great starting point. Yeah. They can find you on LinkedIn. They can find you on Facebook. What do you feel like this year you want to impart as a leader and as it applies to servant leadership?
Well, what I really want to do is to be a head cheerleader for this whole movement and bring a lot of other cheerleaders on with me. I mean, my title in our company is I'm the chief spiritual officer, you know, and I leave a morning message for people and kind of keep on pumping them up. And what I want to do is just, wherever I can, just pump people up to say there's a better way to lead and take a look at this. And that's really what I want to do. And with the fabulous people that I got to contribute, I think we really can have a movement, because they have their, you know, social network and people that they can contact. And if we can get the word out enough maybe we can really impact more and more organizations. The time is right, Chad, and I'm just glad that I'm still hanging in here to do it, but this is really what I want to charge home for, you know.
I love it. I love it. Well, this again is when I would typically say now your final minute with Ken Blanchard, because you do listen to all of our podcasts and you share your in part, kind of in part, what you heard and the key takeaways. So I'll actually just like to give you the final word here and just say, you know, what is the one thing that you want the listeners, and we are videotaping this today as well, you know, the viewers as well, what do you want them to take away from this discussion?
Well, what I want them to understand, first of all, is that leadership isn't about you. It's about the people you. And in order to get that feeling, you have to feel good about yourself. You know, I said people with humility don't feel, you know, less about themselves. They just think about themselves less. And so realize that God didn't make any junk. You know, you really can make a contribution. And how can you gather people around you, and how can you cheer them on and make sure they understand the direction and all to go? And so I think everyone listening can be a servant leader if they get it in their heart that I'm here to serve. And then they can, in their head, they can read this book and get a lot of concepts and all. And then the question coming out of here is, wow, what am I gonna do with my hands, which is their behavior? And it's really fabulous. In fact, my wife Margie even has an amazing article in it about servant followers, because, you know, most of us are followers more often than we are leaders in organization. And how can you support leaders who are heading in the right direction and cheer them on too? And so it's an exciting thing. So remember, you can do it. Every one of you can be a servant leader. Just get out of your own way.
I love it. I love it. Well, we're going to wrap up, and I just remind everybody, the listeners, that a lot of the contributors, Brené Brown, Marshall Goldsmith, John Gordon, others have actually been on the Leader Chat podcast, and you can go to leaderchat.org and look at the top left part of the screen, and you can listen to all the different podcasts. So, Ken, thank you so much for joining us. It's a special treat having you here, and great success with this book.
Well, thank you, and it's really is fun, and we do have a new website called KenBlanchardBooks.com, so you can find some of the other things that all really support, in the long run, servant leadership.
Yeah, thank you, Ken, and thank you for listening as well.